Redemption Road, a Christian Western, written by J.C. Halsey, narrated by J. Rodney Turner. Introduction. Don't Take Your Guns to Town, a 1958 song by Johnny Cash, and one of those songs that sticks in your head. This story is what I got out of the song. Chapter 1. Justifiable homicide. That's what they called it. Therefore, I only had to serve 20 years, rather than the mandatory life sentence for murder. The judge said I could have been hanged, but I got out in 17 years for good behavior. Now here I was, on my way home, wondering if I still had a home, still had a wife, still had a son. Did she wait like she said she would in the few letters I received? I wouldn't blame her if she hadn't. 17 years was a long time to wait on a passionate woman like her. Our son would be grown now. Having grown up without a father, he wouldn't know who I was. It really hurt when the letter stopped coming, but, as I said, I couldn't blame her. She had told me how she accepted the money from Jackson, and that she was using it to buy groceries and supplies. She was going to use a big part of it to send our son to college. He was planning on becoming a lawyer. So here I am, almost home, and wondering just how I got to this place in life's journey. I suppose I had it coming, what with all the things I did before I got married and tried to settle down. I was really fast with a gun, and I did kill some people. I always tried to justify it by claiming self-defense. If the truth was told, they were dead because I was paid to kill them. Whoever had the most money, that was who I worked for. That was until I met Melissa. We were so much in love that I thought I could hang up my gun and live a normal life. But then, what was normal? There was one thing for certain. You could be sure your past would catch up to you. It would follow you around until you had to turn and face it head on. It looks like the Baptist church burned down. It was built on the little hill just east of town, when I was just a boy. I remember when I was older, that church was really a hot spot on Sunday mornings. I guess it got too hot one day. There were a lot of folks baptized in the little creek at the bottom of the hill. I'd see the crowd when I passed by on Sundays, if I got up around noon. They'd all shout hallelujah whenever the preacher would push one of them under the water. I never could understand why a person wanted to waste a good Sunday morning listening to some preacher man tell them they were going to burn in hell if they didn't change their ways. If people went to hell for doing wrong, then hell was going to be busting at the seams. Even the preachers I knew back then weren't perfect, but I've learned differently now. A person didn't have to be perfect. Jesus took care of that problem for us. You'd think a town would change a lot in 17 years, but many of the buildings look the same, only older. Does anything or anybody ever stay the same? It seems that time moves so slowly, yet we grow old so quickly. What was that old saying? It was a tough journey from the cradle to the grave. Indeed, it is mighty tough. I stayed at Mrs. Baldwin's boarding house. I had a room in the back with my own entrance. Mrs. Baldwin was a good cook, so I also ate there. I paid her good money when I had it, so she let me stay even when I didn't have it. She was more of a mother to me than my own flesh and blood mother. I was a fancy dresser, especially when I had money. Folks tried to get me to admit I was doing something wrong to make the money I was spending. Of course, if I got forced into a corner and had to tell them something, I told them I was a good poker player. But if anyone ever watched me play, they'd know the truth. I was a horrible poker player. It seemed the gambling was my only vice. I wasn't a drinker. I abhorred the taste of hard liquor. I couldn't stand the smell of cigars or cigarettes, and it was very seldom that I paid a visit to the rooms above the saloon. It wasn't that there was anything wrong with me. but I guess it was something I heard one time. I don't remember who said it or even where I was when I heard it, but someone said a person should save himself for marriage. If a person was trying to figure me out, they wouldn't find anything bad. Wouldn't they be surprised if they knew the truth about me? I always cut a pretty wide swath in town. I was well known for being a fast gun, so nobody bothered me. I was also known as a gambler who didn't mind losing. When I had money, I didn't mind spending it. Each time I started running low on cash, I went to see Jackson. He was like a well that never ran dry. He always had another job for me. Nobody knew where my money came from. There were a few people that thought they knew, but they were just guessing. Only one person knew for sure. His name was Howard Jackson, and he must have had connections all over the country, because he always knew where I could pick up some easy money. As I think back, I never asked how he got his information. I suppose I didn't care, as long as money was involved. I wasn't a thief. I didn't rob banks or anything like that. I killed people for a living. I was a hired gun, willing to take any job, big or small. And I always delivered. Chapter 2. I don't remember when I figured out I was faster than everybody else. I guess I was about 15 years old when I discovered I could shoot. I had taken my pa's gun from the dresser drawer where he kept it, and when I strapped it around my waist, it was like I was transformed into a sort of superhuman. I felt invincible. I would do anything and everything, simply because I could. I went out in the woods where I pretended I was a fast gunman. You know what? I wasn't pretending. I was fast, and only got faster. I returned the gun to the dresser drawer and started trying to figure out how to get my own gun. I asked every business owner in town if they needed any chores done. I did a few little jobs, but still didn't have enough for a gun. Mr. Fastbinder at the general store had a Colt 45 Peacemaker for $17 without the holster. With the holster, it was $22. Cartridges were 50 cents for a box of 50. I figured it wouldn't do any good to have a gun without a holster. And, of course, a person had to have bullets. I had the $17 from doing odd jobs around town, but wondered where I was going to be able to earn the rest of the money. I went to Mr. Fastbinder. I begged, I pleaded, and I promised, "Please let me work for you just long enough to buy that gun and holster." I pestered him every day for a week. Then he finally gave in and said I could work in the back room, opening boxes and cataloging items. Mr. Fastbinder didn't realize at the time, but he had just contributed to the creation of a paid killer. After I got my gun, I spent countless hours out in the woods, perfecting my fast draw and learning to hit the target without aiming. I kept doing odd jobs around town so I could keep buying cartridges. If you're wondering about school, I quit when I was 13. It was about 3 years later that I met Howard Jackson. He was probably 15 years older than me. I was walking back to my house from the woods, where I'd been practicing for a couple hours. Still had my gun strapped around my waist. As I walked down the middle of the road, I would stop, turn, and draw my pistol, pretending there was a gunman sneaking up behind me. "Hey, kid, what are you doing with that gun? Shouldn't you be in school or home doing chores or someplace beside here, playing with that gun?" hollered Jackson as he sat looking down at me from his horse. I had quit school several years back. My mother ran off with a gambler when I was about 10 or 11, and my pa was a drop-down drunk. So you see, I didn't have much of a home to go to. "I don't see how that's of any concern to the likes of you. You're kind of sassy for a young pup. Pull back your fangs and talk to me." Jackson held up his hands as if afraid. "Tell me, are you any good with that hog leg, or is it just a toy to you?" He almost fell out of the saddle as my gun appeared in my hand, cocked and aimed straight at his heart. "Whoa, hold on. I meant no offense. Holster that weapon. I was just curious. I can see this is serious business with you. Maybe you and I can strike up a kind of agreement. How's that sound?" "What kind of agreement? What do I get out of it?" "You could be a very rich young man if, and I emphasize if, you're right for the job." That's how my relationship with Howard Jackson began. We decided from the very beginning that nobody would know I worked for him. If we saw one another in town, we would nod, say hello, and go our separate ways. We would be acquainted with each other. Nothing more. It worked out well, and nobody was ever the wiser about us. A prearranged meeting place was an old miner's shack about half a mile out of town. If we needed to meet before our arranged time, we would leave a short message right outside the post office door under the mailbox. Chapter 3. I remember the first man I killed. I guess I had just turned 17. Jackson told me I could earn $100 if I killed Lonnie Moore, a local businessman who liked to push his weight around, and wasn't very well liked by the people in town. He always dressed in a nice suit and tie, and wore a pearl-handled Colt 45. He was constantly bragging about how many men he had killed and how. If you didn't leave him alone, you were going to be next. You might think a 17-year-old kid would be a little afraid. This was a little different than shooting targets in the woods. Targets didn't shoot back. But I wasn't afraid. You see, I was invincible. I was a superhuman. There was no reason for me to be afraid. I was fast, probably the fastest man on the entire planet. It was simple enough for me to call him out. But he didn't want to be called out. He was in the saloon bragging about his conquests. I walked up to him and said, "Prove it." "Prove what?" He looked me up and down. "Prove to me and all these good people how fast you really are." "You're just a kid, and I don't want to kill a kid." "If I were you, I wouldn't be worried about killing a kid. I'd be worried about being killed by a kid." "Don't keep pushing me. I don't like it." "There's one way I'll stop pushing, and I think you know what that is." He turned his back. "I ain't going to draw against no kid. You're a low-down, sneaking, yellow-bellied coyote, and your mother disowned you because of it." He turned and said slowly, "No one can talk to me like that. Not even a kid." He reached for his weapon. It cleared his holster, but as he was lifting it up, he was slammed back against the bar. He slid down slowly onto the floor, then looked down at the crimson spot appearing in the center of his chest. "You can't do this. You're just a kid." His head slumped forward onto his chest. As I stood there replacing the spent cartridge, I realized something else about myself. I liked killing him. I actually enjoyed watching his life fade from his eyes. It was a feeling that I couldn't quite describe. A feeling of euphoria. I felt like $1,000,000. As he lay there on the floor, taking in his last breath, and then hearing that little hiss as his breath left his body for the last time, I felt something I couldn't explain. It was like his essence was flowing out of his body and through mine, causing me to be that much better, that much faster. I could hardly contain my excitement. I wanted another job, and I wanted it quickly. Lonnie Moore was my first. I'll always remember that name. People say you will always remember your first time. $100 was the most money I'd ever seen in my entire life, and it was all mine. I spent it like it was going to burn a hole in my pocket if I didn't get rid of it. There were many more jobs after that one. My fee went up and down. Some were a lot of money, and some as low as $50. I either spent it or lost it gambling as soon as I got it. What a young fool I was. Chapter 4. Howard Jackson kept me busy, washing other people's dirty laundry, so to speak. Work they didn't want to dirty their hands with, or they were just too afraid to do themselves. Jackson was very good at keeping our relationship a secret. One day, Jackson paid me $500 up front to kill Jonathan Tidwell. It was official. I was a hired gun. Tidwell was just another dollar sign in front of me. All I had to do to make those dollars mine was to eliminate Tidwell. Of course, I called Tidwell out and made him draw. That way, I could claim self-defense. As I stepped through Jackson's door onto the boardwalk, I saw her across the street, looking in the window of Martha's Millinery. She was the most beautiful creature I had ever laid eyes on. Her dress was a bright floral print, and she had long, curly blonde hair with a milky white complexion. She was probably 5'5", and her figure looked like something out of a mail-order catalog. I was going to marry her. She was going to be my wife. My wife? That sounded like music to my ears. It never occurred to me it was going to be any different. She was going to be my wife. I was finding it hard to breathe. I couldn't swallow the lump in my throat. My heart was racing like a locomotive. This was it, the thing that I had been steering away from my entire life. But now it had happened. I was in love with this woman, and I was going to marry her. The sooner the better. I brushed the toes of my boots against my legs, hitched up my trousers, and walked across the street. She looked up from the window and saw me. Oh my, you startled me. Did you want to look in this window? Am I standing in your way? Hi, my name is Jesse Lee Cutler, and I'm going to marry you. My goodness, you are presumptuous. Not at all. When I see something I want, I'm going to get it, come hell or high water. Now, would you please tell me your name? My name is Melissa Jane Brownlee. She fluttered her long eyelashes and flashed a smile with her pearly white teeth. And pray tell, when is this wedding supposed to take place? Did you ever wonder that I might already be married? You can't be married, because I haven't formally asked you yet. I know that God placed you here on this earth just for me and no one else. How about next Saturday? What about next Saturday? That's when we're getting married, okay? Yes, I'll marry you next Saturday. And that was the way it happened. One day we were complete strangers. The next day, we were as close as two people could ever be. Of course, I had to meet her parents. Her father wasn't happy about losing his little girl. But her mother was ecstatic. Melissa's father was a blacksmith. He was a large, intimidating man with arms the size of tree trunks. He towered over me, and I'm 6'2 and weigh about 200 pounds. He was twice my size. I hoped Melissa was telling the truth when she described him as a gentle giant. His hand covered mine easily as he tried to shake it loose from my arm. Her mother was tiny, maybe an even 5 feet, if she stood up really straight. She was a lovely woman. I hoped Melissa would look like her as she got older. So you're going to marry my baby girl, are you? Yes, sir, I plan to this coming Saturday. I sure hope we have your blessings. And if I don't approve or give my blessings, what will you do then? Well, sir, I would be sad about that for about 5 seconds. Then I would marry your daughter anyway. You'd marry her even if I don't give my approval? Well, sir, I figure Melissa's old enough to know what, and in this case, who she wants. And she says she wants me. That's good enough for me. After all, I'll not be marrying her family, just her. Her mother exclaimed gladly, "My little baby girl getting married. It was only yesterday that you were a little baby, and look at you now. You're all grown up. You're a woman. It won't be long before you'll have babies of your own." I reckon since they can't talk you out of it, I'll give them a blessing. On one condition, that you consider naming your firstborn after my grandfather. It's been a long time since we had a Luther in our family. Now let's have a drink to celebrate. It's not every day a man loses a daughter. Where are you going to live? I have a room over at Mrs. Baldwin's boarding house. We can stay there until I can buy this little place outside of town. I've had my eye on it for quite a spell now. It's not much, but I can fix it up. You planning on being a farmer, are you? Yes, sir. I believe we'll be able to make a go of it. It'll be hard at first, but after the first crop, everything will be great. Chapter 5. We had a small wedding, with just her folks attending. She was so pretty in her white dress, with a veil that covered her face. When the preacher said I could kiss the bride, I lifted her veil, and when her lips touched mine, I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I had made the right decision. I knew at that moment we were the happiest people on God's green earth. And we remained happy for the first 6 months after we bought the little farm from Bert Benefield. He and his wife were given up after 5 years. He said not only was the land barren, but it had cursed his wife. that she was as barren as the land. Maybe I should have taken all this as an omen or something. If Benefield couldn't make a go of it, what made me think I was going to succeed? Of course, when you're young and in love, you feel like you can conquer the whole world. I had confessed what I did for a living to Melissa, and she made me promise that I would hang up my gun and stop doing those horrible things. As I said, when you're young and in love, you can make all sorts of promises and think you mean them. I promised her that I would never shoot another human being unless they were trying to harm either her or me. It was extremely difficult for me to quit what I did for a living because I enjoyed it so much. But if that was what it was going to take to make my bride happy, then I would give it up, no matter how much it hurt. I went to see Jackson to tell him I was quitting. I don't believe you. You enjoy it too much. You may say you're quitting today, but you'll be back. Killing's in your blood. Listen, Jackson, you may think you know me, but you don't know doodly squat about me. I'm turning over a new leaf. I'm getting married, and I'm quitting as of today, immediately. If you see me on the street, go the other direction. Don't say anything, and act like you don't know me. I don't want to have anything to do with you anymore. All right. If that's the way you want it, that's the way it'll be. We had a good thing going while it lasted. Now you say it's over, so that's it. So long, kid, and good luck to you. You're going to need it. Psst. Melissa was mine, for better or worse. I hoped it would always be for the better. I would never do anything to hurt her. I'd never loved anyone or anything the way I loved her. While I was working in the field, she would milk the cow, gather the eggs, and feed the chickens. She worked in the garden, and she did all the inside work by herself. Yes, sir, I had me a Jim for a wife. I had promised I would give up being a hired gun, but I didn't promise I would give up my gun completely. I gave it up while I was working in the field. But on Sundays, I would sneak off into the woods behind the house and practice. I didn't have plans on going back to my old ways because I did promise Melissa. When I'd get through practicing, I'd bring my pistol back to the barn, wrap it in a burlap bag, and push it down in the feed bin. She didn't have to know. Melissa was a very good cook. Her meatloaf was out of this world delicious. I could eat two or three helpings when she made it with gravy, black-eyed peas, and cornbread. I was gaining weight, and she was having to let out the waste on her pants. I didn't know how she was able to complete everything that she did. Not only was I gaining weight, but my body was filling out. My muscles were getting bigger and tighter. Melissa was always telling me how proud she was to have such a strong, handsome husband. She was also a very passionate woman. I was more than satisfied in that respect. Our nights together, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. She was so loving. However, the longer I worked, plowing and planting from before dawn until after dark, the more I lost my desire. It wasn't that I loved her any less. I was just so tired when I came in from the field. Many nights when I came stumbling in, I would splash a little water on my face and fall into bed without even removing my clothes or eating any supper. My desire was almost non-existent. Melissa kept asking if there was something wrong with her, and I tried to explain that I was just tired. As soon as we harvested this crop, things would be back to normal. After a while, she quit asking. What I didn't realize was old Mother Nature was working against me. Right before time to cut the wheat, there came a thunder and hailstorm. It rained steady for 4 days with hail the size of quarters pelting the grain from the wheat. That storm wiped out the entire crop. I was devastated. What was I going to do? There wasn't enough money to buy new seed to plant again. And Mr. Flannery told me last time there would be no more credit. It was the same story at the general store. I only had a few dollars in my pocket. I couldn't handle it anymore. I didn't know what to do, but I can't keep doing this. Melissa didn't need to know about all this. It was going to be all right. That was what I kept telling myself. I wasn't that easy to convince, though. My attitude was getting bad, and I was beginning to snap at Melissa. I was beginning to not like myself very much. I was even more tired because I wasn't sleeping well. I was losing weight and my clothes were just hanging on me. Worry's like a cancer. It'll keep eating away at you until there's nothing left. I wish I'd known back then what I know now. Psst. The Padre read it to me when we were conversing about the Bible. No temptation has overtaken you except what is common to mankind. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. 1 Corinthians 10:13. If I had only turned it over to God. But I didn't know God back then, the way I know him now. It sounded so simple and easy to do. But even today, it was still not easy. It involved a lot of time on your knees. Chapter 6. I'm almost there. Just a few more miles and I'll be home. The home that Melissa and I set up housekeeping some 30-odd years ago. I didn't shirk from the work, but was so tired each night that I didn't even feel like making love with Melissa. Now that was tired. She said she understood and didn't bug me about it. One night, when I did make an effort, she got pregnant. She was so happy. She danced all around the little house, laughing and singing. I'm going to be a mother. I'm going to be a mother. Oh, thank you so much, Jesse. I love you so very much. And I love you very much. I'm glad you're happy. What was I going to do? How could I feed another mouth? We hardly had enough for the two of us. And that was running really low. I busted my back each day from dawn until after dark, trying to produce a crop that would pay the mortgage. I wasn't doing too well. I just wasn't cut out to be a farmer. Worrying about the coming month when the mortgage was due was keeping me awake at night. We needed groceries, too. Melissa hadn't even gotten a new dress since before we were married, and now I had to worry about feeding and clothing a baby. Then one night at about 1 o'clock, it hit me. Why not do what I'm good at? I know I promised Melissa, but I could do it just one last time and make enough to keep us going for a couple of years. She wouldn't have to know. I could make some excuse to go into town and make arrangements with Jackson, then do the job and come back. Shouldn't take more than a couple of days. Melissa wouldn't find out. She couldn't find out. Everything would be okay. Just one more job. That was all. The next morning, after milking the cows, slopping the hogs, gathering the eggs, and feeding the chickens, I said to her, I've got to go into town for a meeting with some of the other farmers, and I'll probably stay overnight. I'll return day after tomorrow. Just a couple days, that's all. Will you be able to handle everything while I'm gone? Yes, you know I can handle everything all right. Just be careful and hurry back. And remember, I love you and the baby loves you. Goodbye, sweetheart. I'll see you in a couple days. I went into the barn and dug down in the feed bin where I hid my gun, remembering how I told Melissa I had sold it. Another lie. Why do we think we have to lie to survive? I strapped it around my waist and fastened the buckle. That old feeling was still there. I was invincible. I saddled the old brindle mare that her father had given me when we got married. She wasn't much good, but she was the only horse I had. Chapter 7. It was a long, lonely ride into town. Was I doing the right thing? Of course I was. It was just this one last time. Besides, if I didn't do it, we'd probably lose the farm. But I promised Melissa. She'd never know. Which was worse? Worrying about whether it was the right thing, or just doing this job and being finished with worrying. Melissa would never find out, right? I wish now that I'd turned back. If I'd only known how, in the blink of an eye, my life was going to change forever. If only I had known. Chapter 8. I rode into town down Main Street. Just as the businesses were opening, and went directly to Howard Jackson's office on the corner of 3rd and Main. He wasn't there yet. That was okay, because he lived in a room above his office. I walked through the alley and climbed the stairs two at a time. I needed to get this over with in a hurry before I backed out. What was I thinking? I couldn't back out. This was my future. The future of my wife and the baby on the way. This was our future. I couldn't back out. I had to do this to survive. I knocked on the door. Nothing. I knocked again, this time a little louder. Jackson came to the door, with his hair all mussed, needing a shave and wearing his long johns. Oh, it's you. What do you want, Cutler? Let me in. I need to talk to you. About what? I thought you said you were through with me and didn't ever want to do business with me again. Yeah, that's what I said, but I've changed my mind. Let me in. I need a job, one that pays a lot. Do you have something for me? Anything? You know I can handle it. Have I ever failed you in the past? No, you've always produced what I hired you to do. How come you changed your mind? Did that pretty little wife of yours kick you out? Shut your mouth. Don't you even mention her. She's too good for her name to cross your lips. Okay. Don't get your drawers all bunched up. I might have something. Come back in a couple of days. A couple of days? I can't wait a couple of days. I need something now, today. Come on. Surely you know something I can do. There is one little job, but it's very dangerous. There's a slim possibility that you could get caught. There's always been that possibility. What do you have? You know Frank Renfro, don't you? Yeah, I know him. Well, there's some people that want him out of the picture. He owns one of the biggest spreads in the county. It's going to be hard to get to him. He always has his foreman with him. Sometimes even more of his hands ride with him. That all you got? That's it if you can't wait. If you wait, I can probably get something a little more accessible. That's okay, I'll do this one. How much does it pay? Well, because he's going to be hard to get to, it's paying $1,500. I could pay off the mortgage, the general store, and the feed store. Well, I could pay everybody and still have money left. This is going to work out just fine. Melissa would never have to know. Chapter 9. I told Jackson I would be back to collect my money when the job was done. I left, taking the steps two at a time again. I climbed aboard the old brindle mare and headed out of town toward the Renfro Ranch. I didn't have a plan. If I wanted to come out of this all right and be able to spend the money, I had to make him draw. That way it would be self-defense. I would be acquitted if I was charged. If it was witnessed as self-defense, then I wouldn't even be arrested. I rode up as close as I dared without anyone knowing I was here. I tied the horse to a bush and started walking toward the house. I got close enough that I could see him through a window. I could shoot him through that window and probably get away without anyone knowing I was ever there. But that wasn't me. That wasn't the way I did things. I had to make it self-defense for me to justify it in my mind. Maybe I could just walk through his front door and confront him. What if he wouldn't draw against me? What would I do then? I guess I was about to find out. I stood up straight and tied down my holster, then walked up to the house and right through the front door. Hey, who are you and what are you doing in my house? He glanced over to where his gun was hanging on the end of the mantle. Go ahead, strap it on. It'll give you a chance to save yourself, but you need to know. I'm gonna kill you. Who are you? I never seen you before. Why do you want to kill me? Actually, it's not me that wants you dead. That hankering belongs to some of those that have been hurt by you. I'm here to take care of their problem, because they don't have the guts to do it themselves. Now strap on your gun and let's get to it. He turned and walked slowly to the fireplace, then reached for his holster hanging from the mantle. Did he think I was blind and stupid? I knew what he was thinking. When he reached for his pistol instead of his holster, I drew my gun and shot him in the chest, just as he was turning with his gun in his hand, cocked and ready to fire. The doors burst open and three or four men ran into the room. The foreman told the others to grab me. It was self-defense. See, he's got his gun in his hand, ready to kill me. I was just a little faster. Take a look. See his gun? It sure looks that way, all right, but that don't explain what you're doing in this house, in this room. Mr. Renfro invited me. He was going to sell me a good cow pony. We talked about it last time he was in town. I reckon I said something he didn't agree with, and he went for his gun. I didn't have a choice. He forced my hand. That's the God's honest truth. It was self-defense, I swear. I believe we'll let the sheriff decide. Bring him along, boys, and send the housekeeper to town to tell his wife what's happened. Then send for the doctor. Chapter 10. They took me into town, and the sheriff locked me up. Until we can sort this out, is what he said. 3 days later, he decided to charge me with murder. It was because Renfro was so well-liked and his friends put pressure on the sheriff. It being an election year, he relented and charged me. I was set to stand trial in 2 weeks when the circuit judge came to town. I wondered if Melissa was worried. Had she heard what happened? I was hoping she would never know. Jackson came to see me in jail. I told you this was a tough job. You should have been more careful. I did the job. Now I want my money. If I don't get through this, I want you to give the money to my wife. She's going to need it with the baby on the way. All right. But I think you need to use part of it to hire a good lawyer. I know one over in Ratchetville in Fannin County. He's young, but they say he's the best defense attorney in 4 counties. If anybody can get you off, it'll be him. Okay. Hire him and get him here quick. The judge will be here in another week. The lawyer showed up 3 days later. He was young. Too young, I thought, to be a lawyer. But what choice did I have? I sure wasn't going to be shopping around locked up like this. We talked, and he told me that because of my reputation, it was going to be an uphill battle to get the charges against me dropped. More than likely, I'd have to stand trial. The judge came to town, and the sheriff told me the trial would be in 2 days. He said I needed to prepare for the worst. The trial lasted for a day and a half. All of Renfro's friends testified how he was such an upstanding person. He would never hurt anyone. Of course, I didn't have any friends except Jackson, if you could call him a friend. Even if he was a friend, he couldn't testify because of our secret relationship. So I sat there listening to all the people telling what a good person Renfro was and what a bad person I was. I got a bad feeling deep in my gut. They were going to hang me. Was this how my miserable life was going to end? At the end of a rope with my boots dancing until they couldn't dance no more? When I was on the stand, I saw Melissa sitting in the front seat. I just glanced at her for a moment. I couldn't face her. She wasn't supposed to ever know. The jury found me guilty, but my lawyer convinced the court that they were mitigating circumstances, and I shouldn't be hanged. The judge agreed and read the sentence. Jesse Lee Cutler, this court has found you guilty of justifiable homicide, and hereby sentences you to 20 years hard labor in the federal penitentiary. He said if it had been outright murder, I would have gotten a life sentence or been hanged. I should count myself lucky. Very lucky indeed. Yeah, I was the one lucky fella, all right. I heard Melissa sobbing as they led me past her and out of the room. The next day, the sheriff took me to the federal penitentiary in Fredericksburg, 3 counties over. It took us 2 days to get there. I was lost, and I couldn't wrap my head around what was happening to me. I kept telling myself it was self-defense over and over. That was what I kept trying to make myself believe. The thing that was really bothering me more than anything else was Melissa wasn't supposed to know. Chapter 11. The years were long and passed slowly. Each day I wrote in my journal. Like I said, Melissa wrote it first, and then more and more time passed without hearing anything. It kept playing over and over in my mind. How could I have done things differently? Why was I here? Melissa was never supposed to know. I broke rocks into smaller rocks, and broke those rocks into even smaller rocks, until they were nothing but dust. I thought being a farmer was hard work, but it was nothing compared to being a prisoner. I not only broke rocks, I worked in the fields, chopping weeds, planting crops that actually grew, and then harvesting them. I even worked in the prison kitchen. I learned a lot of different things in the years I was there. I could be a blacksmith, or I could be a clerk in a store or a bank. I could do or be just about anything folks would let me be. As the years passed, I began to accept my fate. I became a model prisoner, and I made friends with the prison chaplain. I nicknamed him the Padre. We visited a lot, and he gave me an old Bible. If he hadn't given me that tattered old Bible, I probably wouldn't have survived. That Bible saved my life, and the words in it saved my soul. The Padre read to me. The words introduced me to my Savior, and he saved my soul. The Padre explained how God forgives all our sins, even murder. When I was released 3 years early for good behavior, I stayed with the Padre for 3 months in his home. I continued to learn more about forgiveness and unconditional love. I knew God had forgiven me. Now I needed the people I wronged to forgive me. The kinfolk of the ones I killed needed to understand how sorry I was for taking their loved ones away from them. That was my purpose in life now, seeking forgiveness. One day I told the Padre it was time for me to go home. He gave me one of his horses named Lucy, and a saddle with saddlebags and gear. It was a sad day when I told him goodbye. I saddled Lucy and rode away, heading toward my home and family. Chapter 12. It should be just over that little hill. Why am I sweating? I'm just going home. Home. To the house that I repaired with these two hands. Home where I lived with my new bride. Home where she became pregnant with our child. Home where I plowed from dawn till dusk trying to grow a crop. Home where I threw it all away for the love of money. Was it really my home since I threw it all away? I topped the hill and there it was. My home. It was run down, but what could you expect without someone to keep it repaired? I saw a woman in the yard hanging clothes on a clothesline strung between the corral and the chicken house. She was stooped and bent with age. Gray hair hung across her forehead from beneath her bonnet. What was this old woman doing hanging clothes in my front yard? As I drew closer, there was something about her that seemed familiar. When she looked up and saw me, her mouth formed a smile that I recognized. This old gray-haired woman was my lovely bride, Melissa. She dropped the wash basket and started walking toward me. I stopped Lucy and climbed down out of the saddle. I stood there taking in everything, but most of all, Melissa. She was lovelier than I remembered. She got close to me and said, "Don't you know a couple of days means 2 days?" This has been Redemption Road, a Christian Western, written by J.C. Halsey, narrated by J. Rodney Turner. Copyright December 16, 2014, by J.C. Halsey. Production copyright 2015 by Outlaws Publishing.